I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out! It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, a beloved member of the Good Fight podcast family, along with Hidden Season and The Dirty Inning, your favorite Phillies podcasts, all in one place. And we thank you once again for listening. This podcast features myself, Phillies writer Justin Clue of The Good Fight, and also Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Liz, it's a week before Christmas, and people can't stop talking about the Phillies. What's going on? Just this evening, minor league deal for Phil Gosselin. What? I mean, how is it possible to turn this team off?
It's negative DEFCON. It is the opposite of DEFCON. It's the equivalent. That move is the equivalent of a yawn.
People are less worried than ever about the Phillies, which is probably something we'll get into on this episode of Continued Success. Liz, as we're moving past the winter meetings and we're going into the more expansive, barren wasteland of the off season, and the Phillies sure are listed as a part of a lot of different possible deals. But ever since Andrew McCutchen, there really hasn't been much news beyond this Phil Gosselin bombshell we received this evening. They've been in on Andrew McCutchen, said to be pursuing him pretty aggressively. They were kind of whispered to be, also kind of interested in Zach Britton at one point, with Miller kind of overtaking him as the favorite. Then you have Machado planning to visit the team on Thursday. You got Bryce Harper. Reportedly, the Phillies met with his representation in Las Vegas, I believe, during the meetings. Nothing very interesting happened. So at this point, we're just kind of waiting for things to happen, checking the temperature of the room. And I don't know, I actually wrote today on The Good Fight about how Andy McPhail's recent press conference was dealing largely with him talking about how, if the Phillies didn't sign Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, things would be pretty okay. Which, all right, look, you could build a Phillies team that could be competitive this year without Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. You could do it. You could do it. And I think one of the things people forget about are the fact that some of the players who are already on the Phillies are very young and won't repeat the same exact seasons they had last year and could very well be effective members of the Phillies in 2019. I don't know. I mean, that's something that, and we're going to dive into this a little deeper, during an interview today with Matt Klentak. He mentioned specifically, or was asked specifically about guys like Cesar Hernandez, Scott Kingery, and Odubel Herrera, who all, at various points weren't coming through for the Phillies. And he kind of listed reasons for that. Like obviously with Hernandez, it was the case of having a broken foot for the later part of the season. For Scott Kingery, it was a guy who was 24 years old, I believe, and has only created room for himself to improve. And as far as Odubel Herrera goes, yeah, we kind of got word that it was sort of a leadership issue, a lack of leadership issue for Herrera. He kind of lost focus there near the end, and they're kind of relying on him to regain that next year. So I guess just to start off, of those three guys, who will still be here, and in general, how much do you expect to see from guys of that ilk for the Phillies moving forward?
At this point, I feel like they're all going to be here. I want them to trade Cesar, but they don't seem to want to. I want them to put Scott Kingery at second. They also don't seem to want to do that.
I think at this point, the Phillies are just trolling you specifically.
Almost exclusively. Yeah. Odubel Herrera, I don't know. Like he had issues towards the beginning of the season, which is so disappointing. And that interview with him that we all keep thinking about is still very telling. of sort of what happened in the clubhouse last year. You know, everyone just sort of losing focus. And, you know, I feel like Rhys Hoskins is like banging stuff on the floor and like, guys, listen, listen, I have someone stop playing guitar. I have something to say. I would like them all to contribute. I have no realistic expectation of anyone going anywhere. Nor do I think necessarily they should, but they've just created more problems with themselves for themselves at second base because they refuse to choose. They don't feel like they have to choose, and by doing that, they're making a choice to, you know, fuck poor Scott Kingery over and not give him a chance at a clear shot. Like, he's a dude that has an extension, a contract extension before he played a single, you know, he took a single pitch in the majors, and they have nowhere for him to play. I don't understand, like, that in and of itself is something that everyone should continue to talk about forever, because that it's baffling, because he didn't come up as that type of player, as a guy who could do a bunch of infield positions. He came up as a second baseman, and they're just like, we're going to give you a contract to do something that you've never done before. And the entire city is going to have high expectations of you. Good luck.
You heard it here first, folks. Have no expectations about anything moving forward. Tomorrow you will awaken in a blank white void where sound, sight, and the rest of your senses do not exist. And
tell me, would that be so much worse?
Well, let me go back. I mentioned the McPhail press conference and that I had written something about. And basically what I walked away from that with was the pretty like humorous idea of the Phillies kind of stepping out now in mid-December, having allowed all of this excitement to build over what they're going to do and what they're going to do is sign Manny Machado or Bryce Harper. And they had Andy McPhail come out and basically be like, yeah, but maybe we don't sign them. Like, he wasn't out there to say, like, you guys should put this out of your minds. He was out there to be like, but it would be okay if we don't. And what I wrote about today was how at this stage in the game, it's already too late. That you can say that just to get it on the record, to make it clear that, like, hey, we never promised you guys one of these two megastars. We just talked it up, you know, to the point that everybody got really lathered up about it and then sent Andy McPhail out there to back off it a little bit, just in case. So I don't know. Does that tell you anything about how it's going? Or do you think that the Phillies were just like, we should send somebody out there just to remind people that this may not necessarily happen?
Who the hell knows what they're thinking? I don't. I'll be honest. I, as someone who's been so supportive of this front office, I've just lost a lot of confidence in everyone and everything. Kind of across the board. It's been a really interesting offseason.
You heard it here first, folks. Liz Rocher's going with the blank white void moving forward.
Yep, blank white void for me. Merry Christmas. I guess that sounds a little extreme, and I guess I don't necessarily mean it, but, like, man, just shut up. What are you doing? What are you doing out there? I feel bad that someone made him do this. The only person who could have made him do that is the owner of the team, because Andy McPhail's the one in charge. He is the Middleton conduit. You know, he's, you know, the president of baseball operations. I think he also has another title. I think he's team president or something like that. He's in charge.
Yeah.
And no one made him do that. So he felt like he had to do that for whatever reason. And, like, dude, either you've done something that people in 2 to 3 months are going to be like, look at what he said. He meant it, and the Phillies suck. The Phillies are lame, and everything is terrible. He said that the offseason wouldn't be a failure if they didn't sign them. Well, they didn't sign them, and the offseason is a failure, because it will be a failure if they don't sign them. He can say it as much as he wants, but if they don't sign one, the offseason is a failure, because it's so clear that they need someone like that to compete. And if they don't get him, I really don't see how they're going to beat. I mean, ignoring that the Nationals and Mets exist, even the Braves, who have gotten appreciably better, they've gotten more better, if I could say, than the Phillies have. Like,
so
I just feel like the gall of Andy McPhail to feel like he could go out there and say, you know, it'll be fine if we don't sign all of them. We can build a truly competitive team. Like, yeah, if you want to trade a lot of dudes and sign more guys who just aren't the ones you really need.
So, not to be the guy who jumps back and forth on opposite sides of this argument, but like, isn't the offseason only a failure if the regular season becomes a failure? Like, I don't know. You can't call the offseason a failure when it's over, because then the actual baseball gets played and you find out how your moves are actually going to pay off. Signing Bryce Harper and watching him blow both of his knees out the back of his legs in the second inning of game one would make the offseason something of a failure. And then losing a lot would mean it was a failure. But if Bryce Harper goes to Los Angeles and can't get comfortable, and Manny Machado goes to New York and he has like all kinds of problems there, and the Phillies get off to a hot start, I don't think we're going to hear a lot of the offseason was a failure talk. And if you do, you're able to refute it with things that are happening.
I mean, if you sign one of those players, no matter what they do, it's the offseason wasn't a failure. You went out. I mean, the offseason feeds into the regular season, sure, but it's also almost its separate, its own entity, because it has nothing to do with the games played. It's a contest between clubs to see who can pay the players simultaneously the most and the least.
Get the most season ticket holders interested.
Yeah, like it really is. Like, who can you pay the most to while not paying too much? Who can you, you know, lure to come here to make your team better? There are no games played. You know, if Bryce Harper signs a massive contract and blows out his knees in the second game, the offseason wasn't a failure. Bryce Harper just hurt himself, because the following year, Bryce Harper will still be there, and he'll be there the year after that, and probably after that one too. So I feel like I get what you're saying completely, but I also just think that the offseason, when looked at in terms of success and failure, is very separate from the regular season, because you could put together the greatest team in the world and they don't do anything, you know, and you have no idea what happens till the games are played. But if you met your off-season goals, which was to make the team, you know, appreciably better, lots more better, then that you met your goal.
Liz, let me ask you this. Is the off-season a failure if the Phillies sign Bryce Harper, he blows out both his knees, the Phillies trainers send him to a surgeon who accidentally puts his knees on backwards, he becomes embittered, furious at the Phillies, disappears from baseball. They find him 2 years later living in the subway system with the mole people. He's been plotting a super villainous attack on the city of Philadelphia and begins a series of coordinated attacks against the city while coordinating with other super villains who have been living amongst us this entire time. Is the offseason of 2018 a failure in that case?
No, because I think Bryce Harper living with the mole people and plotting anything sounds totally badass. I'd be down for that.
In that situation, is Gritty, where does he fall on the side of, is he in a moral gray area, or is he on the side of good? Or is he just like a presence here in the city, like sort of a Rorschach sort of character?
Phantom of the Opera of the city. Only instead of like a theater and a chandelier, it's all of the stadiums and, you know, everyone's fear of death.
Well, I mentioned the Klentak interviews with MLB Network and Brian Kenny, and they talked
the
about
charisma,
a couple of
my God.
Yeah, this is probably why Yikes. You didn't watch it. The topics they discussed, obviously they talked about Andrew McCutchen, and Klentak had a chance to talk him up. Brian Kenny actually asked about the mental stamina of the Phillies and how near the end of the season, you know, he mentioned clearly this team had played itself out.
Given up and wished to be swallowed by the ground. Yes.
Right. And he actually like phrased it too much like that and went back and like apologized and phrased it in a much more diplomatic way after Klentak had answered the question, but they used it as an opportunity.
This is why I don't interview people.
They used it as an opportunity to, what are you going to do, Matt Klentak, to keep me out of the black white void? Every day I wake up worse and worse, and I've lost total faith in you and the organization. How are you going to fix this, Matt Klentak? How are you going to fix me?
My God.
Grilled.
My God.
No, in this case, he talked up Andrew McCutchen and his stability and the fact that he's played in like all those games for like 6 years now. He's played in almost a full season each year. And Brian Kenny asked about that, which I was, you know, pleased to see a question about that, given that it was such a clear issue that really doesn't get talked about a lot in the mainstream, that the Phillies really, really just gave up near the end of not even near the end of the season, about 6 weeks out from the end of the season, they just looked like. So that was it was encouraging to see. Obviously, Klentak gave a very diplomatic, like, yeah, well, we would expect Andrew to play a role in that, and I do too. I think that's something, even if he's not literally going into the clubhouse and saying, hey gang, let's get out there and give it our best. I know we're 33 games out of first place and none of this really matters, but I think baseball is just a fun game and giving it all just feels better. Now let's get out there before the trash storm hits the stadium. What do you say, fellas? I think it's more just going out there and being alive and healthy and a veteran and all that veteran presence stuff we used to make fun of when we were all so gung-ho about sabermetrics, and now we've all kind of reached a more even ground area. I think that is important. They also discussed the young players that we talked about. And then Matt Klentak said the phrase to describe the Phillies' move so far, because obviously they were segging into talking about Macharper. Well, that's what John Stolness is calling it now, but Machado
now
and
we
Harper.
Are too, I guess.
We've branded that statement. But he said, as far as the Phillies' moves thus far, what they've done is, quote, established the floor. And that's a good thing to hear, because that means we can only go up from here. And we've discussed how I'm not really unhappy. In fact, I'd say I'm quite pleased with the moves the Phillies have made.
Yeah.
And there will be more moves, whether they're the moves people want to see or not. There will be more of them. So that's good to know that he feels like, all right, we've established a foundation from which to make further moves. Like, all right, cool. For a guy who's not going to tell you everything he doesn't have to tell you, which is most things, it was good to get even that bit of information. But on the same day, Brody Von Wagenen was, across the way, a couple states away, talking about the Mets, obviously. New GM for the Mets, former player agent for Jacob DeGrom.
Handsome and full of charisma.
Slick.
My God.
Charismatic.
He's a good looking
man. Wearing a suit. for some reason, we're his biggest fans on this Phillies podcast.
Right now, we've discovered this. Yes, we seem to like him a lot.
Part of that might be because he's always like making moves people weren't expecting and like trying to brand catchphrases, while Matt Klentak is doing his best to, every time he closes his mouth, he thinks maybe this will be the time I will never have to open it again. But in Brody's case, no, all he wants to do is talk about how great the Mets are and how much good he's done for them. And today, in an interview, we saw that he said, quote, internally, we would argue we're the favorites in the division right now. Oh. Now, if you start a phrase with internally, we would argue, that's just saying, you know, yeah, when we're like shooting the shit with each other in the Mets front office, we think that the Mets are the best team. Like, yeah, okay.
When we're all but taking also a steam together, as executive men often do.
Or like starting a sentence by saying, internally, we've discussed. You're now, as someone in our Good Fight Slack pointed out, discussing it externally. So it is not internally saying it. However, we're not here to poke holes in Brody Von Wagenen's statement. It's just more the idea that the Phillies or the Mets are top in the division right now. I mean, let's start with that. We're going to get into a meatier discussion here in a second, but do you put the Mets at the top of the NL East right now?
No.
Me neither. No. But I mean, I get why. Well, obviously I get why the Mets GM is saying that. But I mean, they're definitely closer to the top than I would have guessed by this point at the beginning of the offseason. I think we can at least say that.
Well, yeah, they've surpassed the Phillies. I mean, they traded for Robinson Cano. That happened, right? I didn't make that up.
Yeah, we did not dream that.
Yeah.
I thought
and when Diaz, like, you know, they made their team a whole lot better. More, you know, than the Phillies have, I think. So they've at least leapfrogged the Phillies. Whether they've leapfrogged the Nationals, I think remains to be seen, because the Mets don't have their own Juan Soto. I mean, they can't just, you know, shove, you know, cram Todd Frazier, Robinson Cano, and like three other dudes into a machine and, you know, their own Juan Soto pops out. Like, they don't have anything that even comes close to him right now, at least in the majors. So until they do, I think the Nationals are still better.
If there is a team that could build that machine, I think Brody Von Wagenen's probably got some guys on it. Honestly, I think that's probably priority, let's say, four for the Mets, was machine that can combine the powers of several of our players.
Some of our shittier players into something that is useful.
Clearing roster space whilst creating productive players from our crap. I think that's probably in a PowerPoint presentation somewhere, certainly.
I mean, Van Wagenen was a Major League Baseball agent. Dude knows where bodies are buried. Like, he was sort of a, I don't think he was like Scott Boras, but he's honestly, looking at how much he loves the spotlight and pageantry and everyone looking at him and listening to what he's saying, he is just a different version of Scott Boras.
Well, that's kind of what I'm trying to figure out, what question I want to ask to start this topic. And I guess that's more of what it is. We're looking at two young side GMs in the NL East, and Matt Klentak and Brody Von Wagenen. And I don't know if they could be more different beyond that. Now, moves aside, the Mets have made moves. Brody's made moves to make his team better than anyone thought they were going to be at this point. Matt Klentak has made moves that we've agreed he hasn't really made a mistake yet this offseason. He's made moves to make the Phillies better, not as good as they should be. But at this point, we're satisfied with the moves he's made, and he hasn't had to give up much to conduct his business. So you can't fault either guy for doing something too terrible or ridiculous yet. However, if you're choosing between GMs, would you rather have the guy who wishes his office was in a soundless, airtight room with fogged glass through which you cannot see, where he can conduct his business in secret and you learn what his team is like on opening day? Or would you rather have the Brody Von Wagenen approach, where you probably know what's happening not too long after it happens, thanks to like a video from his own Twitter account, perhaps a billboard, perhaps confetti cannons going over the highways, shooting out orange and blue confetti as people drive into Flushing? Which one of those personalities would you rather see in a free agent? Because we're about to see these two guys seemingly, you know, not go at it, but compete from rival front offices for the next couple of years.
Looking at the two of them, it's like watching a teen movie. Like, Matt Klentak is the pasty-faced nerd, and Brody Van Wagenen is whatever the opposite of that is. The star football player, the
Paul Walker,
you know,
Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God. Yes. But there isn't like a pasty-faced nerd boy. Like, cause it's like you want the sad, weird dude from American Pie, but there isn't like an American Pie analog for Brody Van Wagenen. I think it might be Paul Walker, Freddie Prinze Jr. from She's All That. I think that's what we're looking at. It has nothing to do with their intelligence or anything, but just, I would like to watch Brody Van Wagenen give a press conference. I would be fine with Matt Klentak hiring someone to speak his words for him. He could sit there and just someone else would speak. I think he'd actually be fine with that, because he never looks comfortable or happy to be doing whatever it is he's doing if he is in front of cameras or the press or fans.
So let's say, I don't know, maybe this idea you would disagree with. Between the two of them, Matt Klentak is, I think, more likely to establish a team that stumbles out the gate throughout, when you're looking at his whole tenure as a GM. Stumbles out the gate, but in the end, he builds a longer-term, more successful team, whereas Brody Von Wagenen's going to be tearing down the facade every year and replacing it with a new one that looks fresh but continues to not have as much substance behind it. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Perfect for the Mets. He's perfect for the Mets. That's exactly what the Wilpons want.
God.
I mean, and I had not thought about this before. They want to spend not a lot of money, but they also need to make money and have people interested. And I think they really, really, really want people to stop talking shit about them. I cannot emphasize that enough. I feel like the Wilpons really just hate bad press so much. And like on a deep personal level. And I feel like Brody Van Wagenen ticks all these boxes because he's going to make a lot of pretty flashy moves. It'll cost him some money up front, but they brought Robinson Cano to Flushing and people are going to come out to see that. You know, they've managed to keep, you know, Noah Syndergaard after threatening to trade him. People, that might have just been a ruse. They might have just done that to get people worried that they might trade him. And so they're more grateful to come watch him play. Like, yeah, he's the perfect GM for the Mets. All flash. I'm sure there's substance in there, but we're not really going to know how any of this is going to work until we get to the season. And I don't think he's made a trade. I don't know if he's... No, he signed Wilson Ramos. He's done one of each now.
Maybe in a couple of years we find out that Brody Van Wagenen is just himself a facade with a smartphone duct taped to it that people just didn't... We were fools. We were brought in by the charisma, and it turns out he was also not real. But I mean, yeah.
As soon as you said that, I imagined him as like you open him up like a mummy, like a mummy's sarcophagus, and it's just a bunch of really busy mice, just like inside of Brody Van Wagenen, making him work, like just tiny, very smart mice.
I imagined the Wilpons just being like, "Well, we had a good ride, didn't we, Brody?" And like his face smiling back at them, but then a garbage truck pulls away with the cardboard cutout of him that was him the whole time, like in the back of it, getting slowly crushed by the compactor in the back of the garbage truck.
I'm also imagining him as Vincent Adultman from BoJack Horseman. Somehow, weirdly, like it's like they put on some kind of handsome mask, but he's still two children in a
well,
coat.
I don't know how good of a team he's there to build for the long term. I do feel like the Phillies would at least say that's what they're trying to do. I think you're right that that philosophy really makes sense for the Mets and for the Wilpons. I do think that at the very least, he's going to have the Mets teams that if they're losing, they at least lose with some more familiar faces. I mean, Robinson Cano, nobody was super after Robinson Cano this offseason, but you hear his name and you're like, well, that's news though. I know who that is. And if you're a Mets fan, you're like, well, he was good at one point. I mean, it's like signing Andrew McCutchen, except in Cano's case, everyone was like, oh, he can still, that's good. He's a good player for the Mets. And in Cutch's case, it was like, well, he's old. He used to be good, but he's 45 now when he's actually 32 and had a pretty solid season last year. But yeah, I
the difference between, there aren't a lot of differences between our fan bases, but it just shows what the expectations are like, because Mets fans were not expecting Robinson Cano, but they also were not expecting Bryce Harper or Manny Machado.
Yeah, that's true.
The Phillies fans are expecting that. And so when they, I mean, I don't have any feelings about whether Robinson Cano or Andrew McCutchen are better than each other, because I think Cano is largely a DH now, or he was for a while. And Andrew McCutchen is like an actual outfielder. So, I mean, unless I'm mistaken, I have not looked at Robinson Cano's baseball reference page in a while. But like the difference in the reactions is so interesting, because I just don't think that they're that far apart as far as moves go. But Phillies fans are expecting more, and Mets fans were expecting
less. That's a really
less.
Good point. And I'm now wondering what the reception of Andrew McCutchen I almost said Andrew McCutchman. That's like the fourth time I've almost done that. What the acquisition of Andrew McCutchen would have been like for a team in Philadelphia, for fans of this team who weren't just sitting around waiting for Bryce Harper or Manny Machado to get here. If the expectations had been very low and the team had made the same moves, I wonder how that would have been received. Probably just as bitterly. Probably just like, so what? So what? Andrew McCutchen's 56 years old. He keeps getting older in this scenario. He's aging very quickly. Who cares?
Well, imagine him last year. Imagine them trading for him, you know, or if he was a free agent, whatever it is. Imagine them acquiring him and getting him to play on the team last year when they brought in you know, two older veteran players as well. I think it would have been looked at around the same as Jake Arrieta.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone was terribly married to Nick Williams. And if they had somehow gotten Andrew McCutchen and shoved him in left field, it means that they probably wouldn't have acquired Carlos Santana and they could have played Rhys Hoskins at first all year.
Oh, my God.
Sigh.
Oh, my Sigh. God.
Right, I'm really sorry.
Well, let's do a little. Let's rinse our brains out here. Move on to another NL East team, the Miami Marlins, the only team that no one's really talking about. Real quick question, Liz: do you think the Phillies are closer to the? Well, first, answer this: who is the best team in the NL East right now? All right, so are the Phillies closer to the Braves or the Marlins as far as talent?
And it's not to the Braves,
really that hard of a question to answer, right? The Marlins are just a lost, kind of adrift franchise with JT Realmuto and a lot of people who now hate Derek Jeter. And the reason they're in this position is, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but at least largely due to the previous ownership and the previous leadership with that team that really just swindled a fan base, screwed people out of or sold the team for $1.2 billion. And that's the handiwork of former owner Jeffrey Loria. What was David Sampson? Was he the president?
I believe he was the president of the Marlins.
So I haven't heard about Loria other than references to his,
he's like overseas looking at all of his expensive art or some shit. He made it $1.2 billion and is just enjoying it.
Right. Like he's hunting people, but he's really bad at it. And like the guide is like furious that he has to keep shooting the people for him.
But the best part is we don't have to hear about him anymore.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So he's
unlike this schmuck.
For now, he's out. But David Sampson, former Marlins leadership, you'll be thrilled to learn, is not done harassing the people of Florida. He showed up at ESPN personality
Haven't
Dan,
they been through enough?
ESPN personality Dan Le Batard, a Miami staple, had his birthday party in, you know, public in Miami. First of all, this is a grown-ass person having a public birthday party with, like, cameras there and a stage to talk to the people. I mean, I guess that's something people with celebrity-ish status do, but that's, first of all, okay, that's an event.
Well, I mean, Philly's got their own versions of him, but they are less cool and no one would come to their birthday party.
That's very true. That's very
true. Or maybe they would, but it would be the type of people who would go to Dan Le Batard's birthday party.
Well, at least David Sampson probably wouldn't show up to the Philadelphia version of this party, which he did to Dan Le Batard's party. This was a guy who, like I said, he helped Loria sell the team for $1.2 billion after he had helped set up a deal that allowed Loria to pay only $150 million for the team, helped trick the
taxpayers of Miami into giving the team about over $500 million,
threatened to sue or actually sue ticket holders. Just really vilified himself for good reason. Just did not care. Took his personality, his dignity, and just raked the people of Miami, not caring at all what they thought of him. And that was never more evident than when he showed up at Dan Le Batard's birthday party, clearly drunk, grabbed the microphone and said, thank you so much, thank you very much, as he was being raucously booed. And he says, here's why I love when you guys boo me. Right, I want you to keep booing me, because guess what? $1.2 billion, fuck you, then gave a middle finger to the crowd. Liz, I gotta say, I don't respect this man or any of the things he does. I'm more just marveling at reaching this level of untouchable fuck you-ness with such a contempt for humanity. Like, obviously, you could say on the surface, like, oh, this guy doesn't care that he's hated. I think showing up drunk and making these statements in public at a microphone and like making a real dumbass out of yourself proves that he's actually a very sad, pathetic person. And this only made that much more true.
We still have like D-list celebrities, but not in the way we did like maybe a decade ago. David Sampson is like the D-list celebrity of baseball because he's been doing bullshit for years. He's been going on television shows. He obviously made some money when the Marlins were sold. I felt bad for him for a fraction of a second, and I still hate myself for it. When he was let go, it was clear, you know, either he was told he wouldn't get it, you know, have his job in the following season by Derek Jeter, and yet he still had to fire everybody. Now I'm wondering if he asked if he could do that. if he asked if he could be the one to fire everybody. But like he's like a D-list baseball celebrity in quotes because he's been going on shows ever since the team was sold. He's been on MLB Network. He won't shut up. He has a Twitter account where he says bullshit. Like I'm trying to think of a name of an old D-list celebrity from like the early 2000s, like ones that had terrible, like I can't think of their names because they were like MTV stars from, you know, the Real World Road Rules Challenge.
You know,
that's what he is of baseball.
My mind immediately went back to our teen movie conversation when I was looking for D-list celebrities in my brain. And I landed on Freddie Prinze Jr. And then I was like, you know what? He probably would show up at a Philadelphia area party because he's a huge Philadelphia sports fan. And I also don't think that makes me think, you know what? I don't want to call him a D-list celebrity or put him on the same level as this pathetic piece of trash.
He seems like a good guy with like a good, decent sense of humor about his past.
I think he is. So we won't drag him into this more than we already have. I definitely feel like if you have reached a point in your life where you are drunk in public and grabbing a microphone, just that alone, that beginning of a situation, bad news. You are not going to come out of this looking good. You're definitely not coming out of it looking as cool as in your head you are appearing at this moment. Drunk with a microphone is a dangerous place to be, especially when you are hated and especially when you're in the place where you are the most hated. And, you know, hearing boos makes you, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn on these people. I'm going to remind them why they hate me, and I'm going to flaunt my supposed wealth in their face. But I definitely think we're just a couple of years removed from like a long form article on, I don't know, maybe The Athletic, maybe Deadspin, that almost gets you to feel bad for him because he's like, David Sampson's like pathetic now. He's living in a rancher on some grayscale suburb off a freeway in like central Florida, and like all of his money went into building a casino / fuckatorium that like exploded and killed a bunch of manta rays or manatees that were endangered. And he's got to pay the federal government an ungodly monthly stipend. And how did it go so wrong for David Sampson? It turns out it's just because he was a giant piece of trash who sucked. And
he's one of the entourage dudes in real life. He's Adrian Grenier. He's like Kevin Connolly or, you know, the other, I don't know. I've watched Zero.
Johnny episodes. Drama. Liz is the one.
Yes. No, I'm just trying to remember his real name. He's the brother of someone.
He is the good. He's the nice one. He's sensitive. He has feelings. Turtle is the dopey one who can't ever get a girl. And then the other guy, whatever his name is.
He's like, and now I'm wondering if there's like a gang of shitty, slightly disgraced rich people that he's doing this for.
Oh yeah.
Like I'm amazed he doesn't like throw up some kind of, you know, lame gag sign like I'm here for my brothers and then he runs off stage.
Oh, I'm sure they must all hang out together to make each other feel better about like who
like,
they
otherwise,
are.
Otherwise, why is he doing
what
this?
What they've become. Yeah, like I want this to be on video. This is bad. Like not
I want people to see me shitting on these citizens.
Hey, guys, guess what? 1.2 billion. That's right. I'm drunk at someone else's birthday party with a microphone on camera. And I know every other person in the history of life on Earth has turned this into a humiliating moment they've deeply regretted, but not me. Because you know what? I'll just buy my way out of any embarrassment. I just don't see how you can come back from that without a serious level of self-delusion, which clearly David Sampson has. And that was transparency wise, that's pretty solid. Like that's some transparent upper level baseball executive sleaziness just all on the table. Like, he just made it perfectly clear, like, yeah, we fucked these people over, we don't care, and we have this money and it's great, and I'm sorry for nothing. And so often we just get a guy who comes out and like makes up a bunch of lies, or like, oh, we gave it our best, blah, blah, blah. I really care about this community. No, not David Sampson. He made it clear. Like, I don't give a shit about you. You hate the shit out of me. I really, really hate myself. And that could not be more evident. But here we both are, drunk at a birthday party. Oh, only I'm drunk? Well, I have the microphone. Then I give everybody the finger and leave. So
he's Spencer Pratt. That's it. He is Spencer Pratt. It took me a while to figure out who I'd been trying to think of. But yeah, that's it.
Oh, that guy. Okay, yeah. No, I got it.
Of Heidi. Yeah, Heidi and Spencer. And I really, for a while, I was obsessed with their badness. I've never seen an episode of The Hills, but like she had like extensive plastic surgery. They were both on like The Amazing Race, which I watched for a long time. Like, I was obsessed with their really just fucking terribleness. So yeah, this is exactly who David Sampson is. He is Spencer Pratt, just desperately trying to hold on to whatever fame and power he had.
That's totally, I feel that's totally accurate. Yeah, he's somebody who just wallows in his own crapulence, and then he's so much of an ass that you don't even feel sorry for him. Like, it's just like, oh man. And then like a couple of years later, what did you get? Spencer Pratt like doing an interview where he's basically like, we're broke and pathetic, help us, you know. So I'm sure that's the kind of life. I hope that we get a story like that about David Sampson moving forward, because he is a bad, bad person. Speaking of people, we're going to move on to a story that we don't even really have to leave the NL East to make this connection, because it's a story about Mike Piazza, Liz, who used to play for the New York Mets, as I'm sure you remember.
And recently, Norristown native, proud Norristown native.
Norristown native and former soccer team owner Mike Piazza, a story of which recently appeared in The Athletic's long form section about how he and his wife took over a low level Italian soccer club. And Liz, we both read this story. We're both floored by it. You brought it to my attention, so I wanted to let you kind of give people the talking points from this narrative.
Okay. Well, first off, Mike Piazza is every Guido you've ever met. Every Guido you've ever met who has an Italian flag sticker on the back of his car. He named his daughters with two incredibly Italian names. He went to Italy in his 30s and said he felt like it was home. And like, him and his wife wanted to live there for part of the year. And so they bought, you know, they didn't buy the team because of that, but it was a benefit. She, his wife, by the way, sounds like a real housewife of New Jersey. I admire her commitment to profanity as someone who myself is very profane in everyday life. I actually clean it up quite a bit for the podcast. But man, it's some roughness. It's some, like, she's just not afraid to say whatever it is and show her face, her very angry, mean face. But yeah, they bought a team. They spent a lot of money on it. They didn't really know what they were doing. They ran it into the ground, told people that they were going to be back for another year, put it up for sale. Then told people that the team wasn't bankrupt. They were hoping to sell it, and then filed for bankruptcy.
Hell yeah.
Everyone in the little city where this 100-year, almost 100-year-old soccer club was founded, was there for 100 years. Everyone there hates.
You
want
to talk
them.
About unapologetic? This was beyond Samson levels of unapologetic. This seemed like kind of just barely a dent, you know, for the Piazzas. They really just seemed they were happy to talk about this. And as the writer described, while he was having a conversation with the two of them about this story, about how they helped run this team into the ground, how, you know, there was video footage embedded in this article of like an old man weeping next to a flag for the team because the team doesn't exist anymore. This couple is like,
wasn't he shirtless, like a shirtless old man?
Yeah, shirtless old Italian man weeping next to a flag for a team that doesn't exist anymore. And meanwhile, the Piazzas are giving an interview about this story while they're having like happy hour with this reporter. And his wife, yeah, totally does not care. Like, she's casting herself as like, I know everybody hates me, but I was merciless and I did what had to be done. It doesn't really feel like that. And especially heartbreaking is the moment near the end that you were describing, where they have this wonderful party. Like, the team gets screwed out of a big win that would have seen them graduate from one level to the next. And they got screwed out of a win, but like the next day or a couple days later, the Piazzas hosted this big party for all these people with the team. And they were like, oh, yeah, it was, you know, I'm really proud of this team. We fought to the end. And honestly, like, Piazza's involvement with the team, he like went from running it, realizing he was terrible because he sunk $6 million into the team and was like overpaying people left and right. He went from running it, put his wife in charge of running it, and then kind of took on this hands-on locker room role where he was speaking through an interpreter most of the time to the players, but they were still like roused by him. Like, he was good at that. And it was like, oh, that's cool. That's endearing that he found a role like that after he sucked so much at the business side of it. And then they host this party and everybody's like, yeah, okay, like, that ending sucked, but like, I feel good about the team and maybe they are in good hands. And everybody got like, they were applauding Piazza. They were applauding his wife. A woman comes forward and hands his wife's flowers during the speeches they're giving. And then the next day there's just chains on the gates of the team's facility and they're just gone. They're just gone. And the 100-year team is over, which is, it's just incredible. Like, it feels so bad for this community and these two rich Americans who kind of swooped in, screwed it all up and left town forever.
They just tried real hard to make everyone hate them, to look like the ugly American stereotype. She has no problem being the villain in whatever story she's in. I after reading this story two or three times today and thinking about it a lot, because holy shit, just read it. It's in The Athletic. We didn't say it. It's really something.
I
kind of admire her. I kind of admire her for her just straight up no bullshit. Like, cause that's, I'm a fairly honest / blunt person. It's just my personality. It's who I am. I admire her willingness to be that way in the press, in business. Like, I'll do that with, you know, friends and family and people who know me, but she's like with utter strangers, or with people that who worked for her. Her text salutation was, hey, fuck you. It was. Go read it. It was something like that. It had fuck in the salutation. Like, mine would have been, hey, fucko, but that's just me.
Well, I find it even more outrageous that this was like, she cast this move that Piazza, you know, they were living in Florida. He was golfing too much and he got bored and he was like, I want to do something really interesting. And he
I'm gonna feel.
I'm gonna own a soccer team, and it's like the idea that soccer is a sport played in every country on earth. I'm like, doesn't that make it less interesting and more widespread? But no, okay, yeah, that's what you're doing. And she cast it as a part of his midlife crisis, and so like as a part of this,
yes, rich, which I completely get,
rich asshole American's midlife crisis. This was like a town's beating heart, and he just came in after like checking out other clubs and like other possible teams he could buy. And he decided, oh, you know what? I'm going to buy this team. And they ruined it for everyone. They destroyed a 100-year-old soccer team in a small town in Italy just so he could have a midlife crisis. And now what? At the end, it says, what's he into? He's into Formula One racing and rugby. So just because it was a whim. It was a whim for him. It was one story as a part of his life as a rich American. Meanwhile, we get the shirtless old Italian man weeping next to a locked gate. Like, they just don't care. They don't care what happened to these people at all. And it's just so obnoxious. And you're like, oh, right. This is again, another reminder why everyone in the world hates Americans.
These were people's jobs. Like, these were their jobs. And, like, it's so, I'm half Italian. Like, one part of my family is 100% Italian. My great-grandparents came from Italy. They, you know, one of my uncles, God love him, has a picture, like one of those black and white posters of Marlon Brando up in his home. Like, Marlon Brando as the Godfather. Every time we go over, there's Sinatra playing. There's Sinatra or Dino or something like that. I understand this Italian-American culture. him and his wife at some point were through a benefit for the Italian American Foundation, something that no one in my family would dare go near. That is, it just, it's so, if it, like, gauche is maybe not the right word, but it just feels so performative. Like, I'm going to go buy an Italian soccer team. My last name is Piazza.
Yeah, which means like public space in Italian, and like they had it in a place called a piazza. I did kind of wonder about that offhandedly reading it. Like, was they, like, do they think his name is Michael Public Space? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
God, it's a hell of a story.
Yeah, and everyone should read it. It's not that long of a read, and it does just make you. It just makes you just hate and sad at the same time. I just hate these people who think they can turn communities into their playthings, much like Jeffrey Loria did. So it kind of ties back into that as well. And Piazza also played for the Marlins for a year as well. So look at that. We're doing so many narrative connected threads tonight. It's unbelievable. Well, we're going to close on our most fun topic of the evening. Well, that's actually... Hang on. The topic is going to be baseball movies, but the reason we're discussing this is because because of the passing of Penny Marshall, who passed away today at the age of 75. She directed the film A League of Their Own, which is obviously going to be the reason she comes up in baseball circles over the next week or so. And, you know, I mean, Liz, obviously you're thinking about this movie because it's newsworthy because of what happened, but I was sitting there thinking about this, and I'm not sure. First of all, there are so many terrible baseball movies out there. Even the good ones are terrible. Not League of Their Own. Field of Dreams.
Oh, God. Field of Dreams.
Sucks. The Natural, I don't think I've ever seen it all the way through. The idea bores me. 8 Men Out. Okay. I came around on that one after not seeing it for a little while. That one's okay. I kind of like the less charitable topic, topic to base a baseball story on, rather than just the majesty of the game in America and the grass and the corn and look at the fathers and sons and blah, blah. Like, okay. So most baseball movies suck. I saw a poll today asking like which of these baseball movies is the best, and the options were like Mr. Baseball with Bernie Mac. It was For Love of the Game with Kevin Costner.
No.
Look
at Costner going back to that well a third fucking time.
How many times do we have to watch Kevin Costner put on that whiny, put upon, exasperated face where he barely smiles and he just kind of does that tired dad thing that's supposed to be super appealing?
Okay, back in the day, don't even.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, panty melter.
Bull Durham. I can't. I'll fan myself for a minute. He was.
Bull Durham.
In Bull Durham, which is I don't know if I could decide between that and League of Their Own.
I was going to say, I forgot about Bull Durham. I knew there was one I was forgetting.
Legitimately good movie. And then he went back to the baseball well with Field of Dreams, which is just an overly emotional, nonsensical schlock fest, which my father loves dearly. Because fathers and sons and baseballs and blah. But
so I read,
you know, then he,
I read
the love of the game doesn't even count as a baseball movie, because he's just like, will you think people will go see this if I pick up a bat again? Anyone?
Well, he was an American League pitcher in that movie, so he didn't pick up the bat.
Can you tell,
Liz?
I've never fucking seen it because it's a piece of trash.
And you would know that if you were a little more informed. Thanks.
This is supposed to be about Penny Marshall, but we have so many baseball movie opinions.
I forgot. Yeah, Bull Durham definitely up there. I had another thought on Kevin Conn. Well, okay, that's gone. In any case, A League of Their Own.
You were talking about
his
dad look, and I couldn't let it stand. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's totally fine. A League of Their Own has to be top three baseball movie, and I see no reason why it shouldn't just be number one. It is so entertaining. There's not a performance in it that is bad from everyone on the team, from Gina Davis to the woman who plays her sister, whose name I can never remember.
Lori Petty.
Rosie O'Donnell, Madonna, Biddy Schramm. And then to John Lovitz, who is like a standout and disappears after the first act of the movie. David Strathairn is such a brilliant supporting actor in everything he does, even though he doesn't play the most interesting character in that movie. And Tom Hanks, obviously.
Gary Marshall's in that movie. Her brother's in that movie as Walter Harvey.
Yeah, he's the owner. It's there's not a bad performance in that movie, legitimately. I mean, the worst performance is probably Bill Pullman, and all he really has to do is stand there at the end when he comes back. And speaking of which, that scene where they have to, she slowly walks through the locker room and they don't know who she's giving the death notice to find out whose husband died in World War II. Oh my God, that rips your heart out.
Absolutely, it does.
Every time. And you always, they shot that so well that it looked like it was going to be Gina Davis's husband. And like, there's not a good way that scene's going to end when you're watching it for the first time. And you're just oh my God,
it doesn't matter. I cry every time. I cried the first time I watched it, and I believe I was 10.
Poor Betty Spaghetti. Like, that was so bad. But Tom Hanks, I mean, I don't want to spend this talking about like this wonderfully, this baseball movie about women by talking about, you know, the lead male role. But
he's perfect because people forget. He started as a comedic actor. People maybe don't forget it, but a lot of people do. Like he started on a show called Bosom Buddies, which is my family's obsession. My parents started dating around the time that it was on, like first run. And it is a completely sweet, innocent show about two men dressing up as women to live in a cheap apartment. It's so sweet. And he knows exactly how much to give and how much to pull back. And he knows he's not the star. And so he gives just enough to add something, a good thing, another layer to every scene.
Love
it takes
the show.
A good actor to do that.
Back then, they were just about everyday situations, you know, so relatable. But I remember as a kid watching A League of Their Own for the first time, and the scene, the There's No Crying in Baseball scene, made me laugh so hard, not because of the reason everyone's there's no crying in baseball. That's not the best line in the scene. There are two other ones that had me rolling with laughter.
I know what you're talking about. You know, says, you look like a penis with a little hat on.
Oh, I'm starting with when he says Rogers Hornsby called me a talking pile of pig shit. I was unable to keep from laughing, like crying, laughing when he said that. That is such an excellent, excellent rant. And then, yeah, when he walks away and he says, ever tell you look like a little penis with that hat on? Oh my God, I die. Like, what a perfect little insult. And then he gets in the fight and he's just like, you misheard me. You misunderstood me. Oh my God. It's so perfect.
Like, Penny Marshall didn't write the movie, but I don't know if anyone else at that time could have brought it to life in the way she did, because she had the perfect mix of this screwball. She had the perfect screwball comedy mentality. She spent all those years on Laverne and Shirley, you know, just doing wacky, weird things. You know, she was just so perfect. She directed Big. She directed Jumpin' Jack Flash, a movie I've seen once. And I remember so much of, for some reason, like that is how good it was. You know, she did Awakening. She was so brilliant. And this was a movie she did that was about women. It's a semi-fictionalized story. So it gave her and the writers some freedom to do what they wanted. You know, it's about women playing with other women, problems that women have, and they're not minimized because almost none of them have to do with men. Like, Dottie misses her husband and she's dealing with feelings for the coach, but most of most of the issues are, I have to play, the league is failing, I need people to come to the games, you know, we have a curfew, you know, May keeps getting drunk and going out, you know, it's one of my favorite movies of all time, Baseball or Not. I saw it when I was 9 or 10 at a time I didn't even like or care about baseball at all. Like, my parents took all me and my sisters to see this movie when none of us cared about baseball. And I fell in love with it. I've probably seen it 150 times. We wore out the videotape at home. I watched it every time it was on cable. You know, I'm so grateful that my parents wanted to take us to a movie that was about all women, because I'm like 99% sure that's why they took us, because it certainly wasn't baseball. They didn't take us because they thought we liked baseball. They took us because they thought that their three daughters might want to see a movie that's about all women doing things together. You don't get that now or ever.
Yeah, I think it's so, like, grateful that we have a movie based on this, because this was such a it's such a perfect idea for a baseball movie because it takes you out of the normal realm of baseball movies that hits on all the same themes. Oh, Trouble with the Curve, by the way. That's another one that's absolute dog shit. But that one, that one hits all the cliche points. That is the cliche baseball movie. And this one, A League of Their Own, takes you out of that. It tells you a different story from a different time that we don't have a lot of mainstream exposure to, but we do now because of this movie, and does so with a ton of wonderful performances and terrific writing and direction. So it's like, it's lucky we got this movie. And if she directed no other movies, she would be known for this one.
I was thinking about that earlier today, that we're at a point where a lot of comedy legends are leaving us. You know, as I said to my fiance today, let us count every single day we have left with Carol Burnett and Ed Asner and Bob Newhart before they leave us forever. You know, let's remember who they are. But they never really leave us, because Penny Marshall is going to leave this. This movie is going to outlive her for as long as you can watch movies. As long as there's baseball to watch and movies to watch, this movie is going to be remembered, because it's the only movie about women playing baseball. It's really one of the... Are there other female sports movies that I just don't know
Blue
about?
Blue Crush.
Sure. I've never seen it. I think Kate Boswell.
I don't know why that was the first one to come to mind.
But like, it's, we rarely get movies that are about women being with other women where their problems are not
Bring
men.
It On?
I don't know if that would count. Would that count?
But,
as a female sports
movie? What
about
Bang It Like Beckham? That's a good one.
Oh, that would count. That would definitely count. Like, there are some, but they're few and far between. And, like, you can't make a list of great baseball movies without that
true.
On it.
Yes.
You can't. And if you do, you're wrong. It really is one of the best baseball movies. And anyone who says that it's not has an axe to grind for whatever. They're wrong and you shouldn't trust them. They have, like, I think, God, I saw, of all people, Rob Nyer tweeting something about it. I'm just like, stop talking. Because it's obvious, like, someone, I think he did a quote retweet of someone who said, I've just decided that A League of Their Own is the best baseball movie. And he said, I wish you decided this earlier so I had time to grill you about it. I'm just
weird.
Like, fuck you.
Weird response.
I know, weird for him to espouse a totally contrary opinion for attention just because he's a huge asshole.
Weird response. Weird response from a strange man.
I know.
Well,
but
in any
anyway,
case,
it,
Liz
this is,
and everyone,
it's
an this
important
is going
movie.
To serve as our holiday episode.
I cried when I heard she died, but I was so happy
after
that
the Christmas
she left
holiday.
Us with this movie.
So
that she got a chance to make it. You know, she it, because of her and the screenwriter and all of the women who took part in it, the All-American Girls Baseball League is not going to be forgotten. And I don't know if you could say that with so much certainty if this movie didn't exist.
Well, we are. I know Liz and I are forever grateful that this movie exists. And the passing of Penny Marshall, if you know, as sad as it is we get at least we get to talk about this movie and her legacy that she leaves behind with it, because it is very important. And a spectacular baseball movie that should really be at the top of any baseball movie lists. But this will do it for this episode of Continued Success. This will serve as our holiday episode, as we will not have another episode till after the Christmas holiday. So we wish you all a happy holiday. And here's hoping the Phillies, you know, we wake up on Christmas morning and the Phillies have made a move of some kind. That would be pretty nice gift, you know, to unwrap on Christmas morning. Something has happened. Pretty cool. But if not, you know, happy holidays regardless from us at Continued Success, as well as the Good Fight podcast family, Hit and Season with John Stolness, as well as myself and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. Feel free to subscribe, download, and rate all of those podcasts so that everyone who wants to can have access to these wonderful, wonderful episodes we bring you multiple times a week. Happy holidays from Continued Success, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey, everybody, how you doing? Well, that's good. My name is Bill Matz. I am the director of Fun and Games for Broad Street Hockey Radio Podcasts.
And I am Kelly, the deputy managing editor of BroadStreetHockey.com.
I'm Steph Driver, the NHL editorial manager for SB Nation.
And I am Charlie O'Connor, lead Flyers writer for TheAthletic.com.
And together we make up BSH Radio, one of the shows that you get at the SB Nation podcast family. We have a lot coming to you this year, and we want you to listen to our show. It is just an all flyers, all the time show, so much content. I really hope you listen to it. It is a great piece of the SB Nation podcast family, along with all your other favorite sports.
We all love hockey, specifically the Flyers.
Let's go the Flyers.
The hockey team, the Flyers.